Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
And we just wanted to take a moment to say thank you and let you know how much we appreciate you being part of the Ultra Running Guys community, because we know there are a million other ways you could choose to spend this time.
We love hearing from you. We're always trying to improve. So if you have guest suggestions or feedback, hit us up through social media or reach out to us at theultrarunningguys@gmail.com.
And again, thanks for plugging in. And with that, enjoy the episode. And remember, when in doubt, just show up.
Just told him, I was like, I need to lay down on the side of the road for just a little bit. Give me like 5 minutes. And I lay down, and like as soon as my head hit the ground, I was dreaming. So it didn't even matter like I was on the side of the road. But the annoying thing was, as cars kept stopping to be like, is she okay? And I'm just like, just let me sleep.
And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. And if it's your first time, welcome. We're so grateful to have you. We hope you find the value. And if you do, please share with your friends. Give us the follow. We would absolutely love a review. And if you're coming back, we appreciate you more than you know. You guys are family. But as we always do, let's get right into it. So our guest tonight has been incredibly busy over the past few years, and her ultra signup gives you just a taste of what she's been up to. After running her first 50K in 2015, it was during COVID that she really got warmed up, knocking out her first 100 miler as a virtual race, and then completing an astounding 45 events since February of 2020, which doesn't even include other monster efforts such as the 240-mile Tridge to Bridge, which is an unofficial and unsupported race in Michigan that she completed in 2023. She's currently gearing up to take on the Massanutten 100, another round of the Tridge to Bridge 240 in July, and then our recently spotlighted Mamba 100 in November, which looks like an absolute blast. So stick around while we chat about her experiences, her training, and what prompted her to take over race directing duties for the New River 50K, which just so happened to be her first ultra finish back in 2015. And with that, Melissa Laundrie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Wow. Like, that was incredible of an introduction. And I had no idea I had done that many races. I don't count.
Yeah. We don't either. We just read Ultra Signup and it has a number at the top. I'll be very, very
Oh, okay.
Because that's just too much counting.
Yeah. So, well, but it's pretty interesting though, because there's 49 events. And so obviously, like I said, we know that not every event that you've done is on there, but there's 49. But when you look, there's only four that were prior to February of 2020. So that I was like, okay. And you said in your email that COVID really was kind of the time you picked it up. You did that first 100. Now, I will say, I also noticed I didn't see any DNSs or DNFs on there, which is pretty rare when you're looking at a profile, especially with that many events. So I thought that was impressive as well.
Full transparency though, I have had one DNF, but the race was not an ultra sign up.
Doesn't count.
So, bonus. Okay. That means your ultra sign up rating stayed where it was.
Good job.
I know, but I feel like that. I don't want to be like a fraud and be like, I've never had a DNF. No, I've had one. It just doesn't show up there. But I think that's so valuable, because when people do have one, it's like, oh, I know how that feels. Mm-hmm. Like, and that is, it's going to happen to us all.
100%. Everybody on this call for sure is in the DNF club.
You don't have to look at me.
Some of us more than once, myself included.
I was about to say, Rob.
Yeah, myself included. So I do want to say this. Speaking of DNFs, there is one guy I know who doesn't DNF.
Oh, okay.
And he's actually the guy that turned us on to you. So if you're listening, the one and only Tom Shankopotamus, who we actually just saw at our race, the Hydra. He's the one that said, hey guys, you need to really talk to Melissa Laundrie. She's awesome. She's a great race director. She's just an incredible person. So Tom, thank you so much, as always, for the great guest recommendation.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to make recommendations for guests, we find some of our best guests this way. So thank you, Tom, for that. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Tom is the best in my opinion. Yeah.
It's good. Did you know him too? That's fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, like we said, there's a lot to talk about. And, you know, we had to kind of narrow down the areas we wanted to get into. But obviously, a big part of, you know, talking about your training, talking about the big things coming up, talking about what you've done is kind of getting to know you a little bit, getting to know your background. And so One thing that we do know is you really started running consistently back in 2013 after just some years of inconsistency. You ran your first 10K, half and full marathons all in 2013. What was it at that time after years of just kind of, you know, trying it out that really got you, I guess, the consistency in running?
Well, it was my determination to come back after my first childbirth experience. So I had my son in 2012. And so I was like, I want to be active again. I like running. I feel like that's the only thing to do as an adult sports-wise that I could find here in Galen. So I guess there's probably other places that have more things, but here it's mainly running. And so I kind of got hooked up with the Galex Running Club, and they consistently run. There's two guys that ran at that time really consistently. Tony Truitt, he still runs consistently. He's a great guy. And so I would always run with him and the rest of the folks at the running club at 5:45 in the morning during the weekdays and 7 a.m. on Sundays. And so once I found that consistency and I knew that people weren't just going to like leave me behind because I was, you know, I just had a baby and I wasn't fast, and it was, and I found like a lot of camaraderie with it. Like I found like it was so much easier with the group. Like I didn't feel like I was struggling as much. I really benefited from someone like talking to me the whole time where I could just at the time barely answer. I felt like that company made such a big difference. And then from that, like I found like the consistency, like I consistently got faster. I went from like just doing 3 miles a day to doing 5 miles, and then knowing how that felt with my body afterwards, and then getting to a point where like with the 5 miles, like I don't feel sore afterwards. Like my legs don't feel sore anymore. And I was just trying to keep like a very like consistent pace. I wasn't trying to go really fast. So just trying to be consistent. So it was just kind of like all of those realizations, like that it kept getting easier the more consistent I was and the more fun that I had with it, that I was like, well, maybe I can go for a little bit more.
And we're going to talk about kind of jumping in the first 50K. But one of the things I really appreciate that you say, we know that kind of the community and supportive community is a big thing for you. But thank you for talking about what that running group did for you. And if anybody's listening, because we'll probably have a lot of people, and you know, the experience has been that some people are really intimidated by going to a run group. Like you said, hey, what if nobody's my pace, whatever. But thank you for sharing that experience. And I would just highly recommend, you know, try it out. And there's probably more than one group, you know, that people could try. But
I'll confess, like we have a great run club in our area and I've never gone to run with them. And it's not because I can't run. Like I run, but I do worry about my pace. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to go have to deal with all of that, because I sometimes like just go run and be by myself. Mm-hmm. However, everybody I've ever talked to that's participated in a run club have just huge benefits that they've received from being a part of just the community, just for their own personal running, but also from just the network of people they get to know and make friends with and stuff. And so I agree. I appreciate you sharing it. It is a hurdle for myself, just never having done one. And so I think it's good because I always,
I think that means you have to do it now. Right.
Right. And some of those folks listen to this podcast. So I have a feeling they're going to message me and say, Jeff, you have got to come run. Stop making these.
DM Jeff. If you're listening, DM Jeff.
Yeah. And don't be local to the area. So I can say you're not local.
But, no, I feel like that's just a common experience. Like I hear that from men, I hear it from women, that they're like, they're not going to be the same pace. Even when I organize like training runs with affiliated with my race, like I get a little bit of the sense of the same thing. Like, well, you're going to have to slow down a lot for me, and, or you're going to have to like, you're going to have to wait on me. And I'm always just like, that's fine with me. Like I'd rather slow down and have a good conversation and get to know somebody or spend time with somebody than focus on like whatever distance. That's not why I'm doing these training runs. I'm doing it to like help other people. Like if I want to go faster, like I know the ways how to get faster and I can go out and do that. But the purpose of a training run or a purpose of a group run is that camaraderie and like helping each other meet goals, which is awesome.
And which pay dividends in your consistency. And so our motto is just show up. And we've talked about it several times. Sometimes it's hard to just do that. But I know, I mean, I've got a buddy that I run with, Tim Scott, that I run with pretty regularly. And I'll be honest, on days that he isn't around, I'm probably not as consistent as I would be if he's there, right? So the accountability and having somebody else, the group to plug into, sounds like it made a huge difference for you in terms of consistency.
Yeah. Yes. And now like when I have, I know I joke with my friend Ashley, who's here in Galax, and sometimes she's we can be inconsistent with each other, but sometimes like she'll just say like, I just need to text you. I just text you and you'll go run. And I'm like, yeah, normally if I can make it work with my schedule, someone says, hey, do you want to run? I'm like, yes, I do. That does help. You have that person. You can always just text like, hey, let's go run.
So tell me if I'm right, but it sounds like pregnancies have been kind of a big push in terms of your running, because you just talked about coming back from the first pregnancy. But if I remember right, it was your second pregnancy that shortly after you did your first ultra. So what was it about that and looking at the further distance that got you into that first 50K?
Well, when I did my first marathon in 2013, I found out that I was pregnant like 3 weeks later. So I was like in the best shape of my life, just finished a marathon. And I was like, this is great. I'm in the best shape of my life. I want to keep running. And then I'm pregnant. I'm like, well, that's also great. I'm in the best shape of my life. It's a perfect time to be pregnant. So I did run like halfway through that pregnancy. And then I had my daughter in August of 2014. And then I gave myself some time to come back. And I decided, well, you know, I kind of do need to pick up where I left off. I left off at a marathon. I want to see if I can go further. I don't know if I'm going to be fast or not. I don't know what it's going to be like, but I know that I'm going to be 31, and a 50K is 31 miles. So that's pretty cool. 31 miles for 31 years. So those were the main reasons. And I'd always wanted to do it. I've had other people in the running club who had done the New River Trail 50K. And so I had heard their experience and knew that, you know, as long as I, you know, train, then I could be capable of finishing.
So it's one thing to say that. It's another thing to actually experience it. So when you went and did your first 50K, what was the experience like?
I mean, I feel like I did really well for the majority of it. I remember eating a lot of Oreos.
We can be friends.
Yes. Yes. And I remember it getting really hard after the marathon mark. I do remember that. But I know I walked and I just took my time and I was just going to finish. I didn't really have a time in mind. So I knew I could just keep walking and get there eventually.
Let me ask this, because a lot of people, well, not even just their first, but many ultras. Did you swear off running during the ultra, or did it go well enough where you didn't swear off running?
I didn't swear off running, but I do remember having a chocolate milkshake afterwards. And I was like, I don't think I'm ever going to do that again.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
It just seems odd to me that she's going to swear off this race and yet she ends up directing it.
Right.
I know. Isn't that like, I would never have predicted that. No idea.
So, and I think we'll come back to that to talk about the race and kind of your race director experience, but clearly we'll ask this. It must have made an impact on you. So when you look back at that first one, and maybe it wasn't that, but what was the impact that it made on you that later you're like, yeah, I am ready to like direct this thing and take on the work, which we can get into later. But
I think it was mainly just running a lot of races. And then after COVID, like this race stopped. So then we didn't have like a local ultra to do anymore. And I was like, that's a shame. Like, it's a shame for the newer runners who are joining the running club. It's a shame for like the other people in the surrounding communities who really enjoyed this race. Like, it's a shame for the businesses in Freeze and Grayson County and Carroll County and Galax that are losing out on like people coming to visit. It's a shame that people aren't coming to visit to see how beautiful it is. So I think that had more to do with it than anything. And I know the push that kind of got me into race directing was one, it wasn't, no one had taken it on at that point. And then two, I was going through like this transition. I was going through a divorce. I just lost my school board chair position. I wasn't reappointed. And so I didn't have that on my plate anymore. So I felt like there was a lot of losses during that time. And so I'm like, I've tried to be the type of person who uses these losses, these maybe negative experiences, and to use them as stepping stones to something better. And so that's kind of where it came from. And like, I also had a lot of free time. Like, I wasn't chair of the school board anymore. It took a lot of time and effort, but also gave back to the community, which was the whole point of it. But I felt like, well, you know, I know a lot about running. I run a lot. So maybe I can shift my community focus in this direction instead.
So there's a jump, right? Because COVID came and, you know, this race goes away, but you're still involved in the ultra scene. So what happened when, you know, Jeremy said in the introduction, there was 45 races, you know, that Ultra Sign Up has, or 45
since February 2020.
Yeah. That took place since 2020. Like, how does that happen?
Like, what drew you to say, you know what? I enjoyed doing a few of these ultras beforehand. 2015 to 2020 is 5 years. You had four events. In 2020, mm-hmm. you decided for the next 4 years, you're going to have 45 events.
Plus the ones that are on the
list. Plus the ones that are on the list that, you know, yes, you DNF'd one of those we talked about already, but we got others as well. So what drew you into this community in such a dramatic way?
One, I think it is a huge like stress reliever for me. I think that is so impactful. For one, like I feel like running itself helps mental health, but then two, it has a lot of community pieces to it, which also helps mental health. And at the time, and so 2020, let's set the scene. I'm on the school board and I have to make all these decisions about mask and COVID and school closings and what's going to have all these decisions. And then I also have to have my work, which at that time I didn't have my own private practice. I was working for an agency, and we went from being counselors who only did in person and had no training in telehealth to all of a sudden everything has to be seen by telehealth. And we've got to navigate that world that we've never been prepared to do. And I'm also virtually schooling my kids, working from home full time. It was a lot, a whole lot. And so I really think it was like, once I had, there was nothing else to do and I had all of the stress. So yes, I definitely retreated into ultra running because I needed that respite, that time. And with the longer distances, that gives me the reason to have all that time. And I'm just like, you know, and nothing's guaranteed. I've always wanted to start my own private practice and I'm just going to do it. Like I've already shown myself I can run 100 miles. Like I've already shown myself I can do all this stuff during a global pandemic. So I'm gonna start my own practice. So that was 2021. So 2021, I started my own practice. Then I was also school board chair. And then in 2022 was the divorce and losing the school board position. And a lot of, like, I think that's pretty much the catalyst is a lot of stress and finding stress relief and management in it. And then also a lot of good community outside of all those roles, right? Because you think about like being a therapist, being a community leader, that's a lot. It's a lot. And I needed to get out of both of those scenes in order to have more, I guess, expression of my identity, because I don't think that it was fully captured in just those two roles. And obviously I had to be under a lot of like high composure situations versus ultra running where I can just go out and be a goofball.
I was actually, as you were talking, so it's so interesting. Obviously everybody's got their different experience with COVID. And when the piece that you said that caught my attention was the decisions, like, you know, my experience, obviously it's like, oh, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? To be in a position where now you're having to answer to people that are saying, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? I'm sure it's impossible to please. I can only imagine having to make the decisions that I was essentially there to judge, right? Or that most people were essentially there to judge. And tell me if I'm off on this, but you know, it's interesting. And so when Jeff and I first met, he was actually a campus pastor at a church. And I remember one of the things we had a discussion pretty early on. I said, hey, being a pastor, people look at you a certain way, and it's probably difficult to create friendships because, like you said, you probably feel like you have to have a certain type of composure or people are looking at you a certain way. Was that the same case in yours where it was probably difficult because of everything going on to have those relationships professionally because you had to keep yourself a certain, so I would imagine then ultra running and the relationships there probably become invaluable.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Well, and too, like the decisions that I was making in both like my professional life and then also in like the community life had impacts on people's lives, and not only their lives, but like it's sometimes life or death decisions. And so that's incredibly heavy. So yeah, like the relationships developed within the running scene was, I mean, life-saving for me, honestly, because I need more than just, I know it's a heavy burden to bear. It's a heavy responsibility. And you do get a whole lot of criticism. And in living in a small area, it's not as easy when you're in a big city and you can kind of disappear in the crowd. That doesn't happen here.
No, I agree. I think running allows many people that are in positions where they feel like they're always under the
microscope, if you will, to have some freedom to kind of be themselves in a place that is a supportive community, because we're doing something like-minded and we have something that, particularly in ultra running, we don't typically judge one another. We typically, you know, support one another. We encourage one another. We know that we're all in this mix and mud and mire together, and we're not kind of just making it up as we go. But when we're in our real world, real lives, sometimes there's this positional expectation that we have and people kind of see us differently, where you can't be yourself, which is the unfortunate side of things. So yeah, I think running becomes an outlet for you through all of this, and it becomes a safe space, if you will, for you to kind of be yourself.
Right.
That's awesome. So we've talked about some challenges. So yes, the running picks up. You're doing some incredible things there. Obviously, it sounds like you're working through some challenges along the way. And so speaking of challenges, I'm going to fast forward us a little bit. So you kind of walked us through 20, 21, 22, right? And go through the divorce. Well, 2023 is when, I mean, talk about a big pickup, right? So you did your virtual 100 in 2020. That's your first kind of 100.
Child's play,
right? So in 2023, you do the Tridge to Bridge. I've got all kinds of questions about this, right? But the Tridge to Bridge 240 miler in Michigan, which if I understand is where you're from originally. 4 days, 12 hours, 41 minutes, and unsupported and unofficial. So like, not like, hey, let's just jump into a 240 where we're going to get babied along the way, right?
But yeah, there was no baby.
So why that race? Why an unofficial, unsupported 240 mile?
It's Michigan, and I love Michigan. If I'm from there, it's always been like, I don't know, I'll always have a fondness for it. So when I joined the Facebook group first, and saw kind of what the group was all about, like, and they're hilarious. They're so funny. And they don't post on how you get in. And so like, I'm on that Facebook group and I'm just like, I'm either, my attitude was like, okay, they're either going to love me and I'm going to get in, or they're going to ban me from this group. I don't know what direction it's going to be, but I'm just like, I'm just going to like comment and like joke up with them and just be like, okay, like, how do you get in? Someone tell me how. And they all made jokes. I'm just like, so I need to push a lawnmower. I need to be carrying grocery bags. Like, and I would like post pictures of me pushing a lawn. I pushed the lawnmower because I'm like, I'm getting in this race. I don't know how to do it, but I'm going to do it. Cause it's like, and it became like a challenge too, to be like, can I get in? I don't know if I'm going to get it or not. And so I think that was a really big intriguing part of it, was like, you don't know how to get in and nobody tells you.
It's confusing to me. And that even kind of compounded the problem for me, because it's unsupported and unofficial, right? Unofficial is irrelevant. It's unsupported. So to me, if I'm going to try my first 200, 240, to whatever, right? There's a two in front of all of that. And it's not a 20 mile run. If it's a 200 plus race, I would want all the support I could possibly get. What drew you to something that just says, I don't want any help?
I mean, it's kind of like a flex, right?
I mean, that's true.
I mean, that kind of like, I think I was drawn to the challenge. Like, I don't know how to get in the race. I don't know if I can do it uncrewed. I don't know if I can even do 200 miles. So I don't know. Let's see what happens. And so
let's put all the obstacles up there. All of them.
So give us a quick description of the race. So I'm assuming Tridge to Bridge means something, those two words, Tridge and Bridge. Mm-hmm. And it looks like, when looking at the map, it's somewhat along the water. So like, give us a quick breakdown of the course. I'm assuming most of it's road. How did you get like any of what you needed along the way? Tell us that.
So we do get the route. So that is one thing we do. We do have to stay on course. So if you go off course, you have to start back where you got off course. So it starts in Midland, Michigan. And in Midland, there's something called the Tridge. And the Tridge is a bridge that has three bridges to it.
like a tri-bridge.
It is. Like, yes, exactly. So everybody in Michigan, like, and especially in Midland, like if you say Tridge, we all know what you're talking about. Like, but it's so, I didn't realize like how no one else knows what that is. And then how to explain it. Like, it's just a bridge with three of them that meet in the middle. And there's like this like circle in the middle. And so you start there at the Tridge, and you have to run to the bridge, which is in Mackinac City.
It's like the Tridge without the third one.
The bridge doesn't have a third.
What do you call, in case you anybody, call a, in case anybody's not sure what the bridge is, it's right. like a tridge.
If it doesn't have three of them, it's a bridge. It's a bridge.
Yeah.
What is it? I don't understand it at all. It's a Michigan thing.
It is.
But flat. Yeah. Is it flat and is it roads?
For the most part, I think over the two, it ended up being 245 because there was like a detour because of construction. But over the 245, it was like 3,000 feet of gain. So that's compared to Virginia, that's nothing really.
Mm-mm. Yeah. So. And is it like stopping at convenience stores and grocery stores and things like that to get what you need along the way?
Yeah. So I like had like a plan of like of every place that had like the distance, the mileage, like, and I would kind of keep in mind, okay, like where's the next place? How long do I need to go in between these places? And so that way I know like how much to stock up. Because there is a 40-mile stretch where there's nothing.
Oof.
So I was with Sean and we drank a lot of chocolate milk and like trying to like calorie load before starting that 40-mile stretch. And then he carried my grocery bags. For like a little bit. We had like Epsom salt and like trying to consolidate and it was a lot.
And so he was racing as well?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
I'll say it sounds like support, but I guess if he's a racer.
He is a racer, yes. We took turns carrying the grocery bags.
They were muling for each other.
So does that mean, I'm curious, right? Did you sleep? You had to have slept.
Yes, yeah.
In 4 days?
Where did you decide where to sleep? Yeah, but now you're on just like the road. So you just like find a bench or how did you decide where to sleep?
So I decided to go ahead and, so at the first 40 miles, there's a Standish Motel. So I was like, I got a room at the Standish Motel and I used it for like 3 hours, like, well, maybe 4 hours. So I took a shower, ate dinner, slept for 3 hours. And I think I got up at like 1 a.m. and started again. And then I didn't stop again until 100 miles. So the next middle of the night, I think I checked into that place at like midnight or something and slept for 3 hours, left at 3 a.m. Then the next place, checked in at 6 p.m. I left at, I think I fell asleep around 9, got up and left at 12. So 3 hours each of those nights. And the last night was in that 40-mile stretch where there's nothing. So it was either you stop 20 miles outside of the finish line, which I'm like, I'm not doing that, or you find different places. So that was a hard stretch because I was so sleep deprived. There was points when... And Sean and I were still running together. And I would just told him, I was like, I need to lay down on the side of the road for just a little bit. Give me like 5 minutes. And I lay down. And like, as soon as my head hit the ground, I was dreaming. Like it would, there's the break between reality and dream world was so, I was asleep as soon as my head was down. So it didn't even matter. Like I was on the side of the road. But the annoying thing was, as cars kept stopping to be like, is she okay? And I'm just like, just let me sleep. Let me sleep on the side of the road for like 10 minutes.
At the same time, like any other situation, like, why is nobody stopping?
Sure, I'm glad they checked on you.
For the girl that looks dead on the side of the road.
So then I had to find like places off the road because I was like, okay, there's this like turn off at the picnic table. I was like, okay, I got to sleep. I need maybe 20 minutes. So I got to the picnic table and then I hung my pack on a tree because I was like, there's still bears. So I need to be mindful of that. Mm. So I didn't want to have my pack with me on the picnic table. So I slept for 20 minutes there. And then I put my pack back on. I started back down the road. And then I started having tactile hallucinations. So in my mind, I could feel like a snake in my pack, like slithering on my back. And I was like, I told John, I was like, I think there's a snake in my pack. Like I hung it and I was asleep. A snake got in and I was asleep. So I'm in the middle of the road pulling everything out because it's like maybe 1 a.m. I have no idea. It's dark and there's no snake. And I was like, oh, that was a tactile hallucination. I need sleep. I mean, this is more evidence of how much sleep I need. So I was like, okay, I'll get to another point. I'll find another place. And I think it was like 4 or 5 a.m. We found this marina and it was kind of like off the road. And so when I was like, I think this could be a good place. So I found this like spot in a parking lot where it's by like the marina station and there was a camera. So I was like, okay, if someone comes to murder me, at least they're going to give them a camera. And
that'll help.
They'll catch them. I don't vengeance. Someone will avenge me.
So much for the flex.
Hey, but I did stay. I slept for like, I think 2 hours, and we had kind of agreed. Sean was there for a little bit, and I was like, I'm sleeping for 2 hours. You can sleep for however long you want, but don't, when you wake up, go. Like, you can keep going and finish before me, because like, you've got it in you. Like, I'm just going to focus on finishing. And so I think he stayed like an hour. And I mean, I was just wrapped in my emergency blanket with a poncho over me. And he took a picture of me, and it does look like I'm a dead body out there. Like, it looks so terrible. But, you know, like, the camera caught me. I laid down, I got back up, I'm fine. So there, no one needs to be concerned. But that was the last time I slept.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me, because like, when I was hearing that, and it makes sense that you had Sean with you, because I was listening and I was like, okay, well, if I didn't, I'm used to having my wife and kind of crew, you know, poke me, get back out there. I was like, if this was Jeremy, it would have been the Trench to Bridge 40. Because when I stopped at that first one, that would have been like 3 hours. Nah.
You could have just gone around that circle on the Trench.
That's true. No, I didn't start running with Sean until mile like 90.
Oh.
Yeah. And then from 90 until like 217, 218, somewhere around there.
Wow. And so that makes it more impressive to me that, you know, you had that. Because I would imagine the hardest thing is being tired and having nobody else there to kind of give you the pep talk of like, okay, it's time to get out. Here's your pack. Here's that, which is what I would be used to. So to me, that's pretty impressive, but it's even more impressive. And so we're going to get a little bit into it. So we know, because of the information that you sent, we've been talking about this race experience, but you had some big changes and challenges happen just prior to starting that race. So just for everybody listening, because I think it helps to set that foundation. Talk us through kind of what you had on your shoulders going into the race. And then we want to talk about kind of how you digested some of that and how it played into it.
So the race started, I think, July 10th, I think, or maybe 11th. But on June 30th, I found out that one of my employees didn't renew his license. Whew. And had practiced without a license for 3 months. And so looking at that, it's like, oh, I've never had this happen before, ever, in my entire profession, hearing about this. And what am I going to do? And so, like, I had to, you know, immediately from June 30th until before the race, like, come up with a plan, notify all parties involved, notify all the clients involved, make a plan as far as, like, what am I going to do for this person's employment? You know, what a dollar amount needs to be repaid? Because if you practice without a license, you cannot bill for that. And so all the billing that had happened needed to be returned to the insurance companies and the clients. And then finding out that that was a total of $28,000, it was a pretty big hit.
And just to clarify, so for, because you've referenced it a few times, had your own business, mm-hmm. doing therapy. So mental health professional, where you need a license to practice. And so that's where, yes. Right, you find out that, oops, this lapsed. I'm the owner of the company. The insurance is probably, you know, involved in this for paying for coverage. And now some of that's void and you have to work through this whole problem 10 days before the race.
Yes. Yeah. And also notifying the board of counseling, because I think I have to be responsible as a supervisor as well.
And then if you're willing to talk about it, we don't have to go into details, but you also had been in a relationship as well that ended not the way you would hope that it would end, but just prior to the race as well.
Well, So that all happened with the business June 30th. July 4th, I find out that the person I was in a relationship with that I thought was committed found evidence that that was not the case. Mm-hmm. And so that was July 4th. And then figuring out, like, okay, what am I going to do about this situation? But I kind of got to the point, no, I'm still going to be a good person if I tell what's happened to me. And I can tell also how to get through it too, because I think that's important for other people to hear. Cause I know I'm not the only person who's been in an abusive relationship. There's abusive friendships. There's abusive, like, coworker relationships. A lot of people have kind of seen even just a taste of someone like that has those characteristics. And so, like, I know by not sharing it too, it is a disservice to the other people who may have experienced something like this.
One of the things that I think has really been a benefit to us is being able to connect with people's stories, right? We're all runners. But to your point, there's somebody listening right now that's like, oh, either I've been there, or I have a friend that's been there, or I have other relationship difficulties that some of the things you just talked about are complex, right? It's not, it seems like it could be black and white, but it's not black and white.
Right.
But if I back up a little bit, because obviously, so we kind of just like move through a big part of that process, but this happens right before you're going to line up for a 240 mile race. And so as we're talking about this, it was like, well, why did she show up? I mean, our motto is just show up, but it was like, why did she show up in the first place? You've got a big career bomb that dropped, then you got this relationship that gets blown up. Yeah, we just heard about you sleeping on the side of the road looking like a dead person, right? So you have this adventure that goes by. Why did you decide to continue on with the race?
Well, what better way to process a traumatic event during a 240-mile run? We're like, you know, I'm constantly thinking and like having to face the emotions and deal with it. And I enjoy running. And also, like, why would I give anyone the power to steal all that away from me? Like, that's another thing too. It's just like, there's very few situations I'm going to let take me away from something that I enjoy. Cause I kind of, and I also feel like I kind of get into this like fighter mentality. It's just like, well, I'm going to show them. Okay. I kind of get a little stubborn and persistent.
Well, it seems to have played out pretty well for at least 240 mile results.
So you said at the very beginning that you use negative experiences as stepping stones.
Mm-hmm.
How did this help you as a stepping stone through this race?
Through the race? I don't think I could see it then.
Okay.
I wasn't there yet.
How about after?
After? Obviously, it felt like my life was falling apart. And I feel like it was more like I wanted to find a way to make it come back together in the way that it would be good for me. And like, then that's kind of the decision of like, well, what does that look like? And like, who does that include? Who does it not include? And so that whole experience, that relationship definitely cost me a lot of people. But then I look back at it, the people who stayed, the people who still supported me, who still loved me through it, who wanted what was best for me and didn't abandon me, which they totally could have. But that like really was helpful too, because it's not, you know, and it's also just not me that's affected by these things. Like how I'm getting through it is going to come across to like my kids. It's going to come across to my friends. It's going to come across to, you know, my clients and, you know, anyone that I, you know, interact with. And so it's kind of like, I'm not only getting my life together for me, but I'm getting it back for everybody really that's involved with me or connected to me. So I can show up in the ways that I was showing up prior to them.
Yeah, I can't imagine that the people that are around you now that have seen everything you've gone through, they have just got to be so inspired and motivated by your resilience, your ability to put things back together, to kind of work through just the constant barrage of being punched, you know, because, you know, we started in 2022, you got divorced. And so this has been back-to-back years of just things happening to you. And just the fact that you have come out on the other side, I mean, I don't know you before. It appears even stronger than you were before. And yet they've just got to be inspired watching you.
I mean, I don't know.
it's hard to say. I'll say it this way. I know it's hard to say that, to think that people around you admire you for what you've gone through. But the fact that you have gone through your experiences and that you're able to share them and you're vulnerable with it, you actually motivate people to be comfortable with themselves and to come out of their shell to say, I can get through something difficult too. And so you don't have to be proud of yourself. You just have to allow people to be proud of you.
Okay. That's very kind. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm very good at saying those things to other people, but I'm not very good at receiving those things.
That's why you're a therapist.
I'm just like, this is just what I do. Okay.
Right.
Like,
that's right. But that's why you have to hear
it. I have that Wonder Woman cape and I'm not putting it down.
That's why you have to hear it about yourself as well.
Very true.
And you have to receive it is what you tell your clients all the time. You have to be able to receive it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll move on because we're going to have Steve cut all this out because she and I are going to start crying together. She's like, I'm not crying because I beat you by a minute in a 50K.
Truth.
This is true. The listeners have no idea about that.
Yeah. She beat Jeff by less than a minute at, what was it?
Some made up dream that y'all had some tactile hallucination all talking about again. The freight train, the night train 50K.
Night train 50K. Yeah. She beat Jeff. Go look it up.
By 1 minute. We ran together.
So, okay. So here's the deal. We still have things we want to talk about. I want to talk about your training for Mastodon because you've got a big year ahead of you. But just to kind of close up on the Trish Birch, the I'm interested. Did you ever feel like quitting during that race?
Oh, definitely. Because I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, there was a moment, and Matt Frazier, who's the race director of it, and he's the one who chooses people. He and Sean were there, and I was having like my little meltdown. My legs were so swollen and they hurt so bad. I was at like mile 180 something, like maybe 186. And like, I've never been to that mileage before. And it was just, it was hurting in new and profound ways. And I was like, I don't know if I can do this. And they're just like, well, just, you know, they were very encouraging. They were very kind. I was crying. And they're like, let's take a selfie. So we have this selfie. And I'm like, my glasses are on because my eyes are like so swollen from crying. Oh gosh, it was awful. But yeah, there was definitely a point when I was just like, I don't know if I can do this, but I'm just going to keep going until I can, I guess.
It's so impressive. Well, obviously you finished. Gosh.
It's compartmentalizing. I mean, how do you finish that physically in that much physical pain? And yet with all the mental challenges and emotional challenges going into it, like that's compartmentalizing every bit of it just to move through.
I don't know. Like I cried a lot. Like I really did. Like I was alone sometimes, and I would just call some of my friends and be like, I'm just gonna cry. Like I told them what was going on. And so there are some friends got some tearful calls, and they were so supportive too. And they're still supportive today. And that's what I tell anybody. They're like, what do you do when something gets hard? Or like in these other races, like, I just cry. Like I told you with the night train, like I didn't do very well, but like, and I was crying. I was not okay. Like, so that's how I process things when I'm struggling. And like, I'm probably going to just start crying because it's the only way to release it. And I feel like it's so helpful, but I know other people don't want to do that, but it's just like, I don't know. It relieves so much different pain, whether that's physical or emotional. It's just to cry and then being like, okay, well, that's not, I need to cry and walk because it's not going to get me anywhere just sitting and crying. So I'll be productive, right?
Might as well cover 240 miles.
I mean, the big thing is that so many people would, if they were in that situation, because of everything you've talked about, even what you just said, you didn't compartmentalize it. You did get upset. You did call your friends because of everything you were processing with what was going on. You did not quit. And a lot of people would have used that physical discomfort and that mental opportunity and emotional opportunity to escape that pain and suffering, to get out of it. And everybody around them would have completely understood.
Well, there was no escaping the emotional pain.
Right. And so you just continue to push through it.
That didn't even matter.
Right.
Right. Like, so it doesn't matter if I finish or don't finish. Like, that's still going to be there. The physical pain is going to get better way quicker than that emotional pain.
That's valid.
So interesting to think about it that way. Because like you said, I think my default would have been, it becomes at least an excuse that I have to overcome.
That's right. And so before we get any further past this, we've touched on it. Yes, you beat me by a minute. Yes, you apparently were crying. Yes,
I think
was
you
the
both
were race.
Crying, right?
No, I think that was the race that I was on crutches and that's why she beat me that bad. There's got to be something like that was going on. There's no other explanation if she was over there just emotionally
cool
distraught that still beat me by a minute. But that's beside the point.
I think it's cool you both shared a crying moment.
We always will now.
So one other thing, this is kind of a little bit of a jump, but one of the things that you messaged about that, you know, you feel, I guess, strongly about or passionate about is women's safety while running. And so like you had to think, okay, here's an unsupported race in Michigan. I mean, you even talked about having to hang up your vest.
She
because
talked
of
about being
bears.
On camera so that if she got murdered,
right.
She would be seen.
Right. So I'm interested. To me, that sets the scene, but obviously, we all want women to be safe. But when you say that, what are the thoughts? What's the message? Have there been times that you felt unsafe? Like, let's talk about that topic for a minute.
Oh yeah. There's definitely been times I've felt unsafe while running. I mean, even here, like where we don't live in a very populated area, but years ago, when I was running around with the running club, we had a guy like stalk us in his car, followed us through with the car multiple days in a row. And we did get the police involved. We were incredibly responsive, went and talked to the guy and like, we're like, basically said like, you can't do this. And he didn't have any business being there. He wasn't a runner. He wasn't interested in running. He didn't work there. He'd had kids and jobs elsewhere. Like it was not a good situation, but thankfully the police handled it. And we're like, if you bother them again, then, you know, we're going to take care of it. But yeah, in that situation where that happened, it was like being the type of person I am. Like, I'm going to get their driver's, get their license plate. Like, we're going to report this. Cause like, if we don't report it, it's just going to continue. And we have to report what we see. We have to talk about what we see and experience, because if not, it just allows it to continue. So that happened. And I've had other like just random things happen. I know for Tridge to Bridge, there's a lot of like the police presence. Like it wasn't like planned. It was just like troopers along the road, because it's on off of M23. And so that's a pretty big road in Michigan. And so the troopers are on that quite a bit. And so they were kind of around. So that was easy to say, like, if someone stopped and was like, hey, do you need anything? It was like, no. And the police had just stopped by and checked on me too. And they know that we're all here running, and, you know, kind of like making it very clear that, you know, people know where I'm at, you know. And for that too, like, my friend in Michigan, she had my location at any point. Anytime we would stop, I'd get a text and be like, she said, like, are you okay? Is it something happen? Like, are you just resting? And I had to like check in with her very quickly, because she was like up stalking. She and her coworkers at that point were all stalking my little dot on my iPhone. So I had that in place too. But there was this one man who he stopped, and it was at that point, it was towards the end, and it was raining, and it was raining pretty hard. And he stopped and he's like, do you need anything? I was like, no, I'm running this race. I'm almost done. Like, you know, my friends are like ahead of me and behind me. Like, we're all doing this together. And he's like, well, I'm taking my daughter. I'm going to go pick up my granddaughter, and then I'll come back and just check to see if you need a ride. And I was like, no, I don't need a ride. Like, I'm getting there by foot. Like, I'm like 25 miles out. So like, I'm going to be all right. And then when he came back, he had a safety vest for me, which was nice. Like, it's a bright yellow, but then his granddaughter wasn't with him. And I'm like, where's she? Or was that a lie? Like, to me, get me comfortable, like, in your vehicle? I don't know. It was strange. But then he came back another time, was like three times to ask if I wanted a ride. I'm just like, no, I don't. Like, I'm good. I'm good.
So do you take any, like, when we had Ashley Durston, she had some experiences. I think she runs with a taser now. We had Avery Matthews, mm-hmm. who, you know, historically has run with a knife. Probably, I don't even know if thing goes for protection. She's useful.
She's MacGyver.
Yeah, she's building forts in the woods. But I know she posted recently just about feeling safe. And so she started carrying a weapon. And we've had other people post about that, just like, hey, I feel strong. I feel safe. I feel like I'm taking control, you know, by taking certain actions. Is there anything that you do from a safety standpoint? Obviously, let people know where you're at, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But do you think about protective measures?
I do at times. It just depends on where I'm at and like what's going on. At some points, like, I wish I would have had mace or a knife or something on me. And then other points, there's been like times when I've checked in with my other female friends and been like, okay, are you carrying? Like, which one of us is carrying? Because we don't all need to carry.
Right.
But it's also good to mix it up, to be like, no one knows which one has anything on them. So yeah. So, and then also too, like, I've had, you know, carried a knife before. It just depends. Like, for Tridge to Bridge, I didn't carry anything, just because it's a long way to carry something extra. Mm-hmm. And also, I was like so upset and mad and like all these emotions. I was like, if somebody attacks me, like, it could actually be super therapeutic. Like, I could really like get some stuff out here. Like it might not be a bad thing.
Yeah, that video probably would not have gone the way that we would have thought. Yeah, it's probably good that you weren't carrying a weapon with everything you were going through. But I appreciate you taking just kind of a few minutes to talk about that again, because you mentioned it in the email. It's a kind mm-hmm. of I won't say it's a trend, right? But we've talked about it before. It's not something that I personally, when I go out and run in the dark in the morning, really think about, but I know that that's not the same for all of our female runner friends.
It's pretty unfortunate.
Yeah. And I would also like, I mean, and also going through what I've been through, I expanded also onto like emotionally abusive folks too. And I do think that when I combine my knowledge of mental health and I combine my knowledge of running and kind of like processing and understanding this experience in this abusive relationship, you know, really led me down to like doing a lot more research of like, okay, how many people are abusive? Like, how many people are like true, like psychopaths who don't have any empathy and don't really care about other people. And like, it's 5% of the population. So like, if that's a general population, then you also have to think like, there could be, I mean, that within our own community, in any community, that there are some people who may be predators within it. I want to run races that I feel safe in. I want other people to feel safe in my race. Like, I want that to be like a safe environment, because so many times things have become unsafe for women, especially, and even for men, or there's unsafe community, especially if people are in like recovery, like in going to some events that have like a lot of alcohol in them. Like, it can be, they don't fit in, like they can't partake in that, or they risk their relapsing. And so like, I really try to make it safe for everybody, not having alcohol in my race, and making sure like I create the environment and the culture that's very positive and welcoming, letting people know where I stand on these things too.
Yeah. Oh, so we host races as well. And, you know, we've been asked a very similar question too, about, do you guys serve alcohol at your events? We don't have alcohol at our events either. Couple of reasons, but one of the biggest reasons is even the park doesn't want us to have anything like that we host our races at as well. But it's in our ultra community, there are so many people that have such varied backgrounds of some sort of substance abuse or some sort of personal abuse. Even it doesn't even have to, it can be anything, right? And having a supportive environment for all of those is very important to us as well. And to know that you can go to a lot of these bigger races that have, and there's nothing wrong with those races. They're races that are designed for different people that can participate in. So it's not, I'm sure it's going to come across now I'm being judgmental, right? Not. It's like, there are different races and opportunities for different people. But for me, it's important to be mindful of those that I would like to be able to feel comfortable coming and to be a part of the race without feeling the pressure or temptation or stress of dealing with being unsafe or being tempted to embrace their addiction again, you know? And so I don't want to put them around. Right. That. I don't think it's necessary.
Right. Well, and there's been like research done on ultra runners too. And like a very significant portion have experienced some type of trauma in their life.
That's right. Yeah.
And so it's like, you add that plus alcohol into the mix and like, oof, some, that's just not a good mix.
Right. Because running no longer is our outlet.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking there's very few people on the planet that really want to run 100 miles just for fun, right? Like, most of us have other underlying reasons. Like, yes, is it fun? Is the experience rewarding? Yes. But to the point, I think the majority of us that are doing this, and it can be so many different reasons, but we're working through something. And it's such a great outlet for doing that. But
oh yeah, I'm damaged. I don't have to stay damaged.
Exactly. Right. I love that phrase. I think my corner said that too, something in a different podcast I listened to, like in his, like, so we need to embrace that we all can be broken at some point, but we don't have to stay broken, or we can all be damaged at some point, but we don't have to stay damaged.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It sucks that women are unsafe in running, or in doing something that is an outlet for them too, that they feel unsafe. Cause like you said, we don't necessarily have that same issue. And that's probably just ignorance on our part, not paying attention to our own environment, a lot of things that are going on around us. And so I think it would be good if there was some way that I think men and women can both understand really what's going on for the sport and for those who are trying to participate in it, and why there's such a lack of safety that our female runners are experiencing that we don't necessarily experience.
Right. I think that's why, like, whenever I'm in a good environment and like I meet good people, like, I'm so loud about it on social media, because I'm like, this, I need to be loud about the good stuff. So we boost the good and have more of the good. I always like to think, like, if I put my energy into all the great safe places and the great safe people, then eventually the other stuff will be deprived of the oxygen and attention.
I love it. So good. So good. But I am going to transition us. You, like I said, you've got a big year, right? So we've talked about some of the stuff that got us here. Massanutten 100, May 18th. That's the day that this drops. So if you're listening right now, you know, send some love to Melissa, check in on her. And Melissa, hopefully you get some good entertainment, you know, listening to your own episode.
And if somebody is running the Mass 100 and
say what's up,
say hi to Melissa, because, you know, she's out there.
So for everybody listening, Mass 100, 18,000 feet of gain. So it is not a flat Michigan run.
It's not 3,000 feet over 240 miles.
36 hour cutoff in Virginia. How are you training specifically for this race?
I use races to train. So basically I took my win from January up until really July. So even Massanutten is a training run for the 240. Everything is a training run for the 240 in my mind. And so in January, I ran Solly 50K. That was the first I did 40 miles for my birthday on January 1st. So that was like the kickstart, 40 miles on my birthday. Then Solly 50K was like January 13th. So I did that. And then the next one was Pilot Mountain Marathon, which Solly and Pilot Mountain, they have elevation. And then the next one after that was the LC Enduro, Last Person Standing. And those loops have lots of elevation. So that got 50 miles and 9,000 feet of gain. And then from there, went to the McClellan Madness 8-hour. And that's another trail, looped course for 8 hours. So I got like 38 miles that time. And then for fun, I was like, I want to do the Triple Crown on the AT. So the day before that, I did 20-mile run in Galax and the New River Trail. And then the next day, I did the 36-mile Triple Crown. And that's like 8,000 feet. So trying to like stack the runs together. And then I had my race, so like take a break from running to focus on directing that. And then I did the Blue Ridge Double Marathon, which was, I guess, 2 weeks ago.
I was going to say, that was recent because I just saw the post.
Yeah.
Was it 2 weeks ago? It was a week and a half ago, right?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes sense to me. So you've got some built-in elevation. So obviously, we've talked to people in the past who use races as training, and that's a lot to pack in since January. But what is a typical kind of week look like? Are you putting in mileage? Are you doing strength training? Are you like preparing for each one of those races? Or are you really just kind of maintaining and then go have fun at the race and the run?
She's smiling.
I maintain. It's just mainly maintenance and making sure I'm getting my long runs that I need to get. But ultimately, like with my schedule, so I have my kids 1 week and then I don't have them another week. So the weeks that I do have them, I do run significantly less. And then when I don't have them, I'm running a whole lot more. So like my Strava, like if you look at my weekly, it's just like up and down, up and down, up and down. And like it, and I look at other people's and they're just like nice and flat and like running these 50-mile weeks every week. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Like my life can't accommodate that. My life accommodates it in this way where I do these big, big runs and then I do little tiny runs. So it's kind of based on what I have going on in my life. And then I recently just started coaching varsity track. And so I've been enjoying some speed workouts and I don't know if it's going to help me for Mass and None. I'm just enjoying it. Like I feel like I've got the 50 miler in. I've done a 100 before. I've done quite a bit of elevation. Now it's just recovering and it's just getting it done. Like, I feel like it's just, I've got 36 hours. Like I just got to slog through it if I have to slog through it.
You know what I love about that? Is there so many people listening right now that like aren't going to have a regular schedule or
right.
Be like, hey, how do I put together this 16-week plan? And you're just like, hey, I've got my life. I train when I can. I go do really fun races to prepare for something big.
Yep.
Yeah. And using the races because of your schedule, by having races on your calendar, you give yourself an opportunity to have that longer run, really longer run, not just a 20 mile run, like a really longer run, and going through all the type of experience that prepares you for the ultras. And so I think you have come up with a training approach. We won't even call it a plan, a training approach, right? That works for you and works on your schedule. You're incredibly busy. And like you said, Jeremy, there's a lot of people that have schedules that are like that. Like they don't have an ability to do a 50 mile week each week successively. And plus, like there are people that can do that, but there's a lot that cannot. So I think that's a valid point and it makes a lot of sense for where you are.
Do you do the events like versus hey, I'm just going to go run a big run amount. Do you do the events because of the energy and the people, like, does that help you get that done or is like for enjoyment or is it just, you just like to race?
Well, I do like to race and I do like to do new races and I like to vary what I'm doing, but it's also like, it's a good kind of test to see like where I'm at. Like, and also like where, like, and have that little bit of like competitive, like kick to it too, to kind of seem like, okay, is what I'm doing working? Like, how am I doing compared to other people in this distance? What do I need to shift? What do I need to do differently? And I found out like Blue Ridge 2 weeks ago, I had a lot of nausea and I was like, okay, I need to increase my salt intake. I need to drink more electrolytes. there's some steps I need to make sure I'm doing, especially as it's getting warmer, so I don't experience the nausea again.
So speaking of that, as you're getting moving towards another 240, go to nutrition. What are the things you lean on from a nutrition standpoint during big events?
Oh gosh, like the 240? Like I hit up those McDonald's.
Like Massanut and 100, what will you do about nutrition?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll just eat whatever they have at the aid station. I don't care. Yeah. My goal is to do it as a solo finisher. So I won't have a crew or a pacer. So
just lean on the aid stations.
Whatever they have is fine. I'll be okay.
So you're not going to do drop bags or anything?
Mm-mm. I love her approach. She's like, you know what?
This is like going to see what I can get at McDonald's. It is true practice.
That's great though. But you've done a lot of events. And so, you know, I would imagine what your stomach likes, doesn't like. My guess is with some of the things that you said that you don't have too many problems with it.
No.
Some people are so touchy.
I usually don't. But the thing about me is like when I can't really prepare like what I want to eat. Cause sometimes I do in a race and I have like food in my pack and then I'm just like, yeah, I don't want it.
Right.
I don't want any of that. So like, why not just see what I'm in the mood for at the aid station and just grab that, like, and figure out like is it going to work? Is it not going to work? And mainly I just need to make sure I get enough calories like to keep going. That's all I need.
Cause they probably got sense. Oreos.
Yeah.
Oreos
well, is exactly. the, but it's so, I mean, we've done a lot of podcasts. We've talked to a lot of people. We've talked to a lot of runners. I mean, it is refreshing to hear what you're saying, because there's a lot of pressure that people put on themselves about mm-hmm. having practiced their nutrition, and it's all done with the right intent to be successful in their races. But there is an approach, or there is a mindset that you can take that you're like, I'm going to just take what's available. I'm not going to overthink and overwork this idea. And I'm just going to have fun with it. And I'm going to experiment and I'm just going to enjoy the entire experience, if you will. And so that is a fresh approach to it where, again, a lot of listeners are maybe even listening to this podcast today, say, I wonder what Melissa can give me as a go-to nutrition idea so that I haven't thought about, because that will help me get through a stomach issue or whatever it is. And instead, Melissa's saying, hey, swing by the aid station, grab some Oreos, grab whatever mm-hmm. it is. Your number one priority isn't necessarily knowing exactly what you're going to eat, but is knowing that you're going to get enough calories to fuel your body in that experience. So you don't bypass the aid station. You still need to eat, right? To get the calories, but maybe don't worry so much about what it is. And for some people that will work and some people it may mm-hmm. not, because it may mess with their mind because they're not prepared. But I do think it's a very fresh approach. And we don't hear that often, and it's not a right or wrong. It's just a different approach.
Right.
I think it's good to hear it.
Well, I think it causes me too much anxiety to be like, mm-hmm. I have to eat this. I have to do that. Like my focus is on the next mile. And if I'm like, all I'm really doing with me is I'm checking in to see like, what does my body say that I need? So do I feel a little crampy? Do I feel a little nauseous? Do I need some pickle juice? Like, do they have pickle juice? Like, or do they have something salty? Like, well, how am I going to, if I have an issue going on or if I'm, then I need to figure out how to solve it based on what's in front of me. Mm-hmm. But if it's just, you know, regular, then, you know, throw some food in your pack, you know, take it with you, eat it when you go, like eventually I'll get to it, or maybe I won't, maybe I'll throw it out. I don't know, but it doesn't have to be as prescribed, because I feel like for me, that increases my anxiety, because it's one more thing that I have to remember, where I'm more trying to focus on the present moment, what I need to get through and how my body is feeling and what it might need. Because I'm much more worried about like, okay, do I have a blister that needs to be taken care of right now versus, you know, oh, I hope they have something that tastes good. And like at this point, like, I don't care. Like, float it. It doesn't matter.
That's 45 events of experience though. That's
true.
That is problem solving and recognizing problem solving in the moment that newer runners may not have at that point. But it is exactly what you do when you've gotten the experience under your belt. You're like, I know what's going on in my body. And you have that flexibility because you know it. That's your experience mm-hmm. talking. That's great.
It's also, and tell me if I'm off base, it's also a know thyself thing, right? And so mm-hmm. you know what you value out of the experience. My guess is that you're not going to go in and be hard on yourself for not getting the absolute most out of what you could leave on that course, because there's probably somebody listening right now that's like, but if I want my absolute best, if I want to set my PR, if I want, you know, I want all these things specifically dialed in, or I'm going to feel like mm-hmm. I failed the day. that doesn't hit me as you. I don't think you're going to go out and,
because like, that's not my, the 100 is not my goal.
Right.
The 240 is my goal. So it doesn't matter what happens on the 100 for me. I don't care.
She's going to win the 240 though this year.
No, there's some fast folks who sleep in playground houses or slides, never get a hotel room.
That's crazy.
His name is Joe.
We're
talking about Joe. He's incredible. He's incredible. He was going to run 100 miles to the start of the 240. Like, that was his plan last year. He made it 80. And I was like, Joe, he has 80 miles on him.
Joe Schmo. He doesn't listen to the podcast anyway. You're fine.
That's right.
And if he does, Joe, you're great.
He's amazing. But no, I don't think I'll win. My only goal for the 240 is just to do faster than I did last year. So that's it.
Awesome.
First female then.
He keeps trying to pressure. I don't care. She's like,
I was first female last year. So.
See? What do you want me to say? First female.
I'm going to go back to the point that I think if there's somebody listening, because like you said, it's a refreshing thing to say, hey, I'm just going to play it by ear. And a lot of times we're talking about how does somebody dial it in? So know thyself, know what you see as success. And because you know what is success for you, that approach is like perfect. Mm-hmm. And I love that. Like you said, it's a little bit different. Well, I know we're getting a little bit short on time. I do want to touch on though, the New River 50K. We already kind of heard the story, which I loved the reasoning as to why you became the race director, but just give kind of a quick pitch for anybody listening. What is it about the race? What is it that you love about the race now? You know, give us kind of the RD perspective.
One of my favorite things is that the people who ran the race years back when Allison and Jason Bryant were RDing, and even the previous RD, because I'm the third one, like the people who ran the race then still run it today. And I've gotten to know them and they are amazing. Like, I have so much respect for them. And that's a really cool thing for me. Like, I really enjoy that.
Are they glad you put it back together?
Oh yeah. They were very excited about this being back. So I want to like do a good service too, like making sure that, you know, it's one, it's good for all the runners. Then two, it's good for the community as well. The local community. That's really important to me.
And so just a quick overview of the course itself. Is it a point to point, out and back, loop course? Like, you know, if somebody was thinking about signing up for something, what do they need to know?
So it's an out and back course. It's along the New River mainly. And then it cuts off. If you're doing the 50K, I'll go along the Chestnut Creek. So the Chestnut Creek flows into the New River. And so when you start off, like, you're in freeze and it's really cute. It's a really cute little town. And then you kind of go across the road over to continue on the trail. And then you're right next to the river. And it's so, so beautiful. Like, the river is just right there. And it's just such a big wide river with so many different rocks and wildlife. And you get to cross the trestle, the bridge, and then you get to go through a tunnel. Like, I put glow sticks in the tunnel this year because someone had an idea last year to put glow sticks. And I was like, that's the best idea ever. So there's glow sticks in the tunnel. I just love it. Like, and it's really flat. Like, the 50K at like 666 feet of elevation gain, the 25K is 333. So I feel like, and I'm obviously biased because I'm like, it's a great first 50K. Like, everyone should run this for their first 50K because, like, you it's got a generous cutoff. It has an early start. You know, you can do this. It's flat. It's great. And then also too, if you do for more of like the road runners or the folks who want to qualify for Boston, like the 50K has a marathon split. That's a Boston qualifying time. So
wow. It's
a certified course.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And where's this located for those who are listening? Where's the New River 50K?
It is in Freeze, Virginia.
Awesome. Well, we'll make sure we put the links and everything in there so that way everybody listening can go get the information. To kind of close this out, you sent us a quote. And so I'm going to read the quote and I want to know what it means to you. And I think this ties into a lot of the topics we've discussed tonight. But you said, we can accomplish anything. Right plan, right people, right support. What does that mean to you?
I really do believe that. I really do believe that we can really do anything. And I feel like every single time I do all this stuff, like it just kind of, it sets it in stone. Like, okay, I didn't think I could do it. And then I went and did it. And then really it was successful. So like, why am I listening to the voice inside of my head that says I can't do it? So I can do it, but I'm going to be more successful when I do have a plan and when I do have the right people who are supporting me in it. Because I think that those are the two biggest pieces to doing anything that we want to accomplish.
So look around, make sure you got those people around you.
And get plugged in. So if you've been listening for a while, but you're not plugging into community, you know, I would say think about that, because I think that that's the biggest value that probably Ultra Running has to offer is the community.
So. Cut the dead weight.
Yeah. Well, look, keep the good ones. Keep the good ones. The good people who have good values and want to treat you good and have your best interest in mind. Those are the people you want around you. The people who are going to criticize you, the people who want to tear you down, the people who want to belittle you, you block them. That's my motto, block them. Like, don't give them any attention. Focus on the people who are your people, because everyone has a tribe, and the people that are for me are for me, and the people who aren't for me are for other people. And that's cool. I want to put the attention to people who are for me.
Yeah.
I love it. And speaking of connecting, where's the best place for people to connect with you if they want to do that?
Facebook. I'm on Facebook, and then I'm on Instagram. After the race, I feel like I'm so like a little bit social media'd out a little bit. So I've definitely taken a break with all of it, but I'll get back to that creative.
Well, you have three social media accounts on Instagram.
I do. Right. Yeah.
You got a preference?
I used to post. I used to post like daily on all of them, and then burned myself out. My ADHD attention went someplace else.
Well, we'll get the right ones listed. So for sure, you've got at New River Trail Races, and then also from your mental health business at Body and Mindfully Healthy.
Yes. Right?
Yep. And then at Melissa Laundry. And so we'll get those posted. But this has been I just think it's a great conversation. I love your energy. Thank you for just the stories and all the wisdom and just for being open with us. I think there's just been so much value to be had. And for anybody listening, again, I know that you got that value, but if you're getting the value, share with your friends, give us a follow, all that. It really helps us grow the show. But Melissa, thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you guys. And all your kind words too.
Absolutely. And again, May 18th, Massanutten 100, go get it done. And we'll be checking in on you. But for everybody else, we'll talk soon. Cuts.
I'm only laughing because as a therapist, this is making her very uneasy, because they're like, they're going to fire questions and I'm not sure where they're going to go and how I can be quick to answer. And I got to be like reserved. And
I am much more calculated. Yes. I appreciate
it. So if we reference a person named Steve, that's our editor. So we're like, hey, Steve, cut that out. And he'll search for his name.
Yes. Yeah. Now I have balloons.
What was that?
A reaction. Apple has like the, if I make like too much like movement.
Did you see the balloons?
Balloons happen. I was actually looking at some of your all past posts, and I realized that Jeff and I both ran the night train 50K last year. And I was like,
you beat me by a minute. Did you look at the finish?
Did I? No, I didn't look at the results.
You were less than a minute ahead of him.
We literally finished at the same time, which means we had to have run together.
We probably did. I was a mess that day. I'll just be honest. Like it was not a good day.
Tom Shinkopotamus. Do you know that name?
Yeah. Yes. He's just amazing. He's just such an incredible person. And then I just really want to be like him when I grow up.
No kidding.
Every weekend, 2 days a weekend. Like, it's just incredible.
You almost say cut.
No.
Cut.
Cut.
I've got good news for you. This entire portion that we just had is going to make the
blue. Oh, yeah. This will be fine.
Like, there's not even going to be cut. It's going to be just there. It's like, oh, look, Jeff's complete slip up. And he got crushed by this person who had a horrible race.
All right. Listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like.
We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up.
Clean.
Clean.